Don't mind us, we're playing through. Here's Froggy and Wacker.
Welcome to another edition, the first one of 2020, to the Playing Through podcast. There is so much going on in the golf world. I am Froggy from Elvis Duran and the Morning Show, alongside my co-host, Brian Wacker from Golf Digest, on Twitter and Instagram, at Froggy Radio, at Brian Wacker 1, or you can reach the program anytime at Play Through Golf, at Playing Through Golf on Instagram. So, Wacker, I know you got an early start to the season. We are two tournaments in already. We got the Century in Hawaii. You were there. We got the Sony in Hawaii. And there literally is golf news just coming out of the ass. So how do you want to start?
That's an expression I didn't really expect in the first 2 weeks of January 2020.
But we do.
But yes, you are correct. We've got all sorts of news we're going to get into. I mentioned I just got back from Hawaii, so I'm just still getting over the jet lag. I know, boo-hoo, who really gives a shit?
Right.
No one cares.
Nobody feels sorry for you and your – because, last night I'm talking to Wacker. He's like, yeah, you know, the weather was terrible. It rained every day and it was windy. But you were in Hawaii, so nobody feels sorry for you.
No, nor should they. But it was an entertaining first couple of weeks. Of course, we had Justin Thomas winning in a playoff over – by the way, how about this? So we sit down with the commissioner – the first week of 2020 in Maui at Kapalua. And he does this every year, sort of meets with the media there. And he, in context of something else, says he'd like a playoff every week. Well, guess what? He got one at the Century Tournament of Champions with Justin Thomas beating Patrick Reed and Xander Schauffele in an amazing playoff, really. Xander Schauffele just admittedly giving that tournament away. And then the following week, we get another playoff with Cameron Smith winning at the Sony Open in Hawaii. So the commission is 2-for-2 on playoffs, getting his wish. Let's hope that trend does not continue. But, yes, it was an eventful 2 weeks, a lot to get to. We've got, of course, those two events in Hawaii. We've got another Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka dust up. We've got Tommy Gainey. We've got Phil Mickelson. We've got Tiger Woods. A lot to get to. You're right, it's a busy couple of weeks jumping in with both feet.
It is. And by the way, also, I had the pleasure of talking to Rory McIlroy and Carson Daly. They were here in Ponte Vedra. Rory was shooting a promo for NBC that you'll start seeing to air on hole 17 at TPC Stadium Course for the Players. Had the pleasure of meeting both of them. Super nice dudes. Carson Daly will be coming on the podcast to talk to us. Carson's actually a pretty good golfer. But a very cute promo they did. Rory is Carson's caddy as Carson goes to play the 17th hole. And then they had Rory hit a couple shots blindfolded. So a lot of fun there. But so much going on in the golf world. Like you said, we had a playoff in Hawaii. But the big news so far this year, outside, you know, kind of other than just, you know, playing and winners and whatnot, is slow play has seemed to be a problem on tour. We've talked about it here on the program so many times. It comes up every time you turn around. It seems to always be the same players. They were always talking about some guys getting accused of slow play and don't like it. Brooks has been very vocal on who he thinks is a slow play. So can you kind of break down for us, Wacker, because I know you understand it much more than I do. Can you break down what has changed in the slow play rule and how does it affect us moving forward through 2020 and beyond?
Well, sure. And I don't know, you know, look, there's definitely some changes and some significant ones, but I don't know that anything has materially really changed. As you mentioned, they unveiled the new pace of play policy. As I mentioned earlier, had a chance to sit down with the commissioner the first week of January. And effectively, the slow play issue, if you will, is going to target two big points out of it. It'll target individuals rather than groups. There will also be a list kept on a week-to-week basis of slow players, or of the slowest players, I should say, and penalties levied for, quote, excessive shot times. Now, the tour will use shot length data to compile this information. They'll basically create an observation list, and then warnings will be given if a player exceeds 60 seconds to play a shot. and then a second bad time, if they're issued a second bad time, that'll result in a one-stroke penalty. Now, the big thing here is you've got this observation list, but that will not be made public. So only the players who are on it will be notified that they are on it. In other words, other players won't necessarily know about it. The public at large won't know about it. So this is really in line with, you know, how the tour operates, its MO. For example, when it comes to disciplinary matters, they do not comment unless they really feel a need to either correct something that's incorrect or for a specific reason. But generally speaking, they do not comment on disciplinary matters.
If you're on the slow play list, only you know. They don't put out, say, a release player wide and say, these 10 players are on the list. You're only told on an individual basis. So therefore, the only way you would know who's on the list is by asking or unless somebody else who's on the list tells you. Is that correct?
That's correct. So in other words, there's no way that players are going to be, quote, shamed into playing faster because no one will be privy to that information outside of the tour. So,
whatever, that's bullshit. Put the list out of who the slow players are. Even if you don't want to put it out on a website, I understand that. But put out a press release within your own little circle there with all your players on. Hey, these are the slow guys. I guarantee you play will speed up a lot quicker that way.
That's an argument that a lot of people make, that if it was publicly known, you know, who was on the list and who was a slow player, that those guys are going to be, they're going to pick up the pace because
right
now the information is public. To me, the big takeaway on this is that while they have moved, they have enforced, or rather they have enacted a greater emphasis on slow play, they are still a ways away, it appears, from issuing strokes and or issuing a stroke penalty if someone violates slow play. So to me, you know, look, from people I've talked to within the organization, within the tour, people on the player advisory council, the tour really doesn't want to have a golf tournament determined by someone getting a slow play penalty.
I do.
Right. And the public, I think, you know, it'd be interesting to see the reaction of that because I think it would be very polarizing. You would have, I would imagine, a large segment of the population saying, you know, this is nonsense, that it shouldn't be determined this way. And then you have people saying, good, as you just said, they would be, you know, because that would ultimately speed up play.
In most other sports, you are on a clock. You are timed in most other sports. So let's say football. If you're, they don't say, well, you know, this game's important. It's the Super Bowl. So we're going to go ahead and take that play clock off and let you have as much time as you need to run this next play. It doesn't work that way. The time determines the outcome, and you need to play within whatever time frame that the league has determined and dictated that you need to play in. I think exactly the same thing needs to happen in golf, and that, you know what? If you don't play within the allotted time, you get docked a stroke. You brought up a great point when you and I were discussing this before, that when the sun's setting and they don't want to be there an extra day, oh, they all of a sudden find a really clever way to start speeding up play all of a sudden, and they finish around. I don't understand. They would do the same thing if they knew a stroke was going to be penalized against them and they were not going to win the golf tournament. They would find a way to speed up play.
And I think where it gets tricky is, look, slow play is generally not an issue on Saturday and Sunday when you've got 65 players or thereabouts playing in twosomes. That's generally not the issue. It mostly comes up on Thursday, Friday, when you've got a full field, guys playing off both sets of tees in threesomes. That's part of the problem. But we have seen it on occasion on the weekend where guys do play slow. And to your point, you know, these guys are certainly capable of playing within an allotted amount of time. Now, the sort of flip side to this argument is, of course, you go back to the 2005 Masters, 16th hole, Tiger Woods' chip-in, and how long he took to play that shot. If you were to sort of abide by the letter of the law, then he didn't really prepare for that shot in the amount of time that he's supposed to.
Correct, and but doesn't it say that it's on a shot-by-shot basis, that if some shots do require extra time. They're going to be – see, it's like
– right.
It's almost like they laid down the law, but then they backed it up some.
Right. So getting back to the rule, okay, so you've got to get on that observation list. A player's historical data is reviewed over a 10-tournament rolling period, right? And then those players are then subject to a 60-second timing for every shot. And if the player exceeds that, then they're timed on an individual basis, even if the group is in position and, you know, they're playing right up to the group behind in front of them. If no infractions occur within the two holes, he's no longer timed. You know, another situation that'll be instituted is if any player in the field is observed to take more than 120 seconds to play a shot, and this goes back to Bryson DeChambeau last year, of course, taking over 2 minutes during the Northern Trust to take a putt, then he will be given an excessive shot time. The other end of it is fines. The fines have ramped up dramatically, up to $50,000 now from the past, where it took, I believe, a number of bad times to get to a $10,000 or $20,000 range, if memory is correct. Now that number is $50,000, so it's a lot more. But to your point, strokes are really the only thing that's going to pick up the pace. If you start hitting a player with right. strokes, or there is the threat of that, that is really the only way the players are going to increase their pace.
Yeah, they don't throw a flag in the NFL and say, we got a delay game. We're going to hit each guy on the offensive line with a $5,000 penalty here. Let's replay second down. No, they back you up right. and they penalize you. And that's exactly what needs to happen here. These guys, because let's be honest, Wacker, it's the same people every time. You don't see new people popping up on the slow play accusation list on a regular basis. It's the same people. And once you do it a couple times, it's fixed. Now, here's my question. When they are accumulating the penalties, are they accumulated daily or tournament? So in other words, if you get popped on a Thursday and then you get popped again on Friday, is that infraction number two, or is Friday a whole new day and that's infraction number one again?
Yeah, no, this will go, I believe, on a round-by-round basis. So it happens every time, you know, a guy plays. And look, to your point about this, really, for me, it comes down to the enforcement, right? So you've got two things. You've got the actual penalty and what that should be, whether that's a fine, a stroke, what it takes to get to those levels, et cetera. And then you've also got the enforcement. And to me, that's the tricky part, because, you know, I've talked to people on the Player Advisory Council. I've talked to people within the tour. The tour is reticent to have a golf tournament determined by a stroke penalty. So they're very hesitant when it comes to actually enforcing and handing out a penalty for these situations. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. We're a couple of tournaments in. They just announced it. It'll go into effect this season.
Yeah, I think in April, the RBC, correct?
Yes. And so, you know, we'll see how this plays out, really. And it's also fascinating to me from a viewer standpoint, because how does the problem exist? You know, generally the tournaments finish on time on Sunday. We've come perilously close a couple of times for tournaments spilling over into Monday. But they're also working within a TV window of trying to finish at an exact time. But we've also seen cases where it's come close to not finishing because of slow play. Yet as a viewer, when you're watching on television, you're not seeing the slow play because the television cuts from shot to shot to shot of different groups. Rarely does it come up that TV shows a guy playing slow. We've seen it on a few cases, be it J.B. Holmes, be it Bryson DeChambeau. And then, of course, this stuff exists in Twitter, in the social media world, and, of course, in person as well. So it's interesting to sort of look at it from all facets, because, when you're watching on TV, Froggy, do you notice slow play? I mean, is it, unless it's being talked about, I mean, is it something you really see?
I just see sometimes it takes a guy a long time to play a shot. And I'm like, okay, like, yeah. you know, we know about the J.B. Holmes incident last year. Yeah. I just know that there's times that it does seem to take a long time. But like I told you, it's the same. It's generally the same people all the time. It's not like I don't think it's a tour-wide or a field-wide problem. I think it's a couple select people. And if you dock those people a shot, not money. Come on, these guys have got enough money. It's not a big deal. If you dock these guys a shot when they're in contention, things are going to change. And until they're willing to do that, everything else to me is they're still just working their way towards a real problem.
Again, this is a step in that direction. Will they ever get there? We'll see.
Right. But I don't think we're there. I think we're this is another move in the right direction. I'll give them that. But to me as a fan, it's not that much closer to where we need to get. I do think it's a step in the right direction. But you mentioned Bryson as being one of the problems. Now, see, my issue there is Bryson says he's not a problem. But he was called out directly by Brooks Koepka in that he is – Brooks called out more than one person, but Bryson's one of the ones he called out. And so we've had this little issue going on with Bryson and Brooks where there's been a problem, and Brooks did the body issue for Sports Illustrated. Bryson had something to say about that. And so now I guess it's really kind of starting to boil over. And as recent as this morning, we have another rebuttal from Brooks. Is that correct?
We do. I guess we can call this one Appsgate, maybe, because Bryson, of course, this is another story that's been out there since our last podcast, is that Bryson has packed on a bunch of weight, 20-plus pounds, and is trying to get bigger and bigger and bigger in an effort effectively to hit the ball farther and to withstand the rigors of playing a PGA Tour season. So he had a jab at Brooks Koepka, and whether Brooks Koepka had abs or not, of course, Bryson, being the scientist he is, knows that we all have abs. It's just a matter of
whether you can see them.
Who's right, whether you can see them or not. I'm pretty sure Brooks Koepka is in his shape is just fine.
Correct.
And Brooks firing back today, this morning, with a tweet: "You were right, Bryson DeChambeau. I am too short of a six pack." And he posted pictures of his major championships trophies, which of course is four. Bryson, of course, has zero major championships,
right.
And I don't believe has a top 10 in a major. So Brooks, again, willing to fire back. And let's just say these two will not be on each other's Christmas card list.
No, and we haven't seen Brooks. You know, he did not play the Hero. The last tournament I believe he played in, he had to withdraw with a knee injury, so he did not play the Hero. He withdrew from the President's Cup. He wasn't able to play there either, and he said he was going to be ready for the season. And so as we are doing this podcast, we have finally gotten our first look at Brooks. He's playing at the HSBC in Abu Dhabi. And after the first round, we will give round one to Brooks. Brooks shot a 6-under. He is two back of the lead and in third place. Bryson shot even par. I'm not sure exactly what place that's good for, but however, round one goes to Brooks on the golf course. And I'm going to give, you know, listen, I don't dislike Brooks Koepka. I don't really dislike a lot of players, but I don't dislike Brooks. He's not my favorite. I appreciate the talent. I think the swing is phenomenal. I'm not going to deny the unbelievable clip at which he's winning majors and how it's crazy to see him walk in and be a favorite at every major. It's unbelievable the way he's playing. However, I think his game on Twitter and his, for lack of a better term, shit-talking game might be slightly better than his golf game. Between the guy that told him he needs to go drive a truck and he told him a Brinks truck, and now this too short of a six-pack with Bryson, I think Brooks is actually a pretty good dude, actually.
Yeah, Brooks' humor is a lot like he plays golf. It's blunt force trauma.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of subtlety to it, and that's his personality. That's the way he plays golf. And I'd have to agree. He certainly brings a stronger game on the course than Bryson at the moment.
Yeah,
and certainly on Twitter as well. You know, now look, I'm sure Bryson was just poking fun, but this all traces back to, of course, as you mentioned earlier, Brooks having called out Bryson for slow play at one point. And we know this. So, look, we had Brooks on the podcast. He's not a guy to mince words. He will willingly call out other people. He's called out Sergio Garcia in the past on our podcast. He called out a number of other players for being too buddy-buddy and friendly with the media.
I like that.
Yeah, in a story that I wrote for Golf Digest a couple of years ago. So, yeah, Brooks is willing to speak his mind. And so you at least have to give him credit for that. And really, there's no contest between Bryson and Brooks at this point.
No.
It's not even a conversation if you look at the results on the golf course.
And I do. I like the outspoken Brooks. If you remember before, too many times, Brooks was given a hard time for the fact that he didn't really say anything and then he didn't really have an opinion and he was too vanilla. Well, I like the fact that he now speaks out. The Sergio comments that he made, he's pointed out who the slow players are. He has no issue whatsoever calling people out. And you know what? I appreciate that as a fan. I appreciate that as somebody who does a podcast. I like the fact that he is not afraid to speak his mind instead of getting up there and giving us the most vanilla BS answers that you know are just what he's been told to say by somebody else. And so I appreciate that. And speaking of guys who have given us a lot to talk about as we move on forward, your buddy Tommy Gainey, we haven't been able to get into what happened with Tommy. So Tommy did win the Korn Ferry Tour event in the Bahamas, a four-stroke victory, very convincing victory, his first win in a long time. But not the first time Tommy's been in the news recently. Is that safe to say?
Tommy's had an interesting month. He, just over a month ago, he was caught up in a sting called Operation Santa's Naughty List, where he was arrested for solicitation of a prostitute. So that, of course, made news. Then he comes out a month later, remarkably, with all this swirling around him, and we don't know the outcome of that arrest yet. I'm sure there is a court date set, but comes out and despite that manages to win quite convincingly, as you mentioned, the Korn Ferry Tour season opener in the Bahamas and played really well. So that was quite the turn of events for Tommy Gainey in the last month.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane. And then I will say this, and I'm sure they were instructed, the announcers on the broadcast for the last 2 days of the tournament, as it was telecasted on television, never mentioned one time about the arrest. 124 people arrested over a six-day sting, like you mentioned, in Polk County, excuse me. And they never mentioned it one time. Now, when he was arrested, he was among the round one leaders. He shot a 74 and a 71 on the weekend after his arrest, dropping him to 75th.
Yeah, it was a bizarre, bizarre turn of events from that all the way to this. And look, a lot was made of the broadcast not mentioning that the last 2 days. And look, I can't say I'm surprised. If you look at the history of the Golf Channel in the past, when these sorts of things have happened, and, you know, it's simply not their MO to mention it within the telecast while broadcasting the event. Now, they'll certainly mention it in other programs such as Morning Drive and other ancillary programs centered around tournament coverage. But in the actual tournament broadcast, this has been their history. This is not something they will get into. And if you look at other networks, you know, if you were to take CBS and the NFL, Fox and the NFL, I would imagine in many cases, similar instances have occurred. Maybe not always, but I can't say I'm surprised that it did not get discussed in the broadcast. You know, should it have been? That's a different conversation, but you would certainly think that it would be because it's a relevant piece of information.
Yeah, I would even see it maybe at the end, like as he's got a four-shot lead, he's on 18, you're like, hey, you know, there was an unfortunate incident. There was an arrest earlier this year, but what an amazing story. We are a society of second chances, and we love second chances. I think it's great he's made a comeback, able to put his life back together, able to put his golf game back together. A win on the Korn Ferry Tour, just a single win, does not guarantee you status back on the PGA Tour. But if he has another couple good finishes this year, we should give him back his tour status and put him back on the big boy tour. So I think there should have been some mention. It didn't have to be gratuitous and embarrassing, but there should be some mention of it, in my opinion.
And I credit Tommy Gainey at least for, look, you didn't expect him to get into it, but he did make an allusion, presumably to those events, saying, quote, getting his life back on track, you know, was a goal. So, look, you just hope he moves forward with this and we don't have to worry about this. Tommy did not speak about the matter additionally, but you, again, not surprising. It wasn't really mentioned on the telecast.
Right.
You just hope that he gets things in order off the golf course. And, you know, as you mentioned, the victory goes a long way toward his goal of getting back out on the PGA Tour.
Right. So something else that has happened since we have been gone happened at the end of 2019. And I meant to tell you that I wanted to mention this is the whole Patrick Reed controversy at the Hero. And then Cameron Smith speaking out about him being a cheater going into the President's Cup. And then now he's hired an attorney and asked Brandel Chamblee to stop calling him a cheater. I mean, Wacker, you're around these guys and you see what's going on and you, you know, are talking these circles. Is number one, I'm going to ask you, I guess the first question is a very simple question, and I'm not trying to get you sued. Is Patrick Reed a cheater? I mean, the stories keep coming up. There's the stories from when he was in college. There's the stories on tour. There's the Hero. There's... Is Patrick Reed, in fact, a cheater?
Well, as I've been advised by my legal counsel, I should probably refrain from comments. No. Look, I don't want to get into that because, you know, it's hard to get inside of Patrick's head. And even once in there, it's a interesting and strange place. So, but look, there's certainly been a number of incidents around him, controversial things that have occurred. As you mentioned, all the way dating back to his days in college. So this reputation has followed him. And generally where there's smoke, there's some fire. And what I can say is that he was not looked upon kindly by his fellow competitors. You mentioned the Cameron Smith comments. A lot of players didn't want to really speak publicly about it, but privately share the same thoughts as Cameron Smith did. And, you know, they don't have a lot of tolerance when it comes to potential cheating. So from that standpoint, he lives in an isolated world. It's interesting. It's, you know, we hear a lot of the times that players all get along with each other. They all like each other. And that's just not really the case all the time. Right. Certainly not the case here. I think what it'll be fascinating to see is how this plays out later in the year when it comes to the Ryder Cup. So if Patrick Reed is not one of the 8 automatic qualifiers for the Ryder Cup team, does he get picked? Because again, you know, I think Tiger was willing to give him a pass and maybe give him an opportunity with the President's Cup. You know, we saw what happened there. Again, got, you know, there was an incident with his caddy,
right,
with a fan, with an overserved fan.
Now, look, he did win on Sunday in his singles match.
Well, and that, you know, and that brings up another point that's relevant in that he seems to not just revel in this, but he seems to thrive in his situations. He seems to play some of his best golf when he's embroiled in controversy. You go back to that 2018 Ryder Cup and, you know, he was embroiled in this situation. Granted, it didn't come out until afterward, but he clearly was not happy. He felt like there was a buddy system being enacted, and he felt like an outsider in that situation. And he goes out and wins his single match on Sunday handily. Now, the U.S. lost the Ryder Cup, but Patrick won his singles match. This incident at the President's Cup, rather the incident at the Bahamas the week before the President's Cup happens, there's a big firestorm around it. You've got the Cameron Smith comments. And then he turns up in Australia. His caddy gets into it with an overserved fan, gets told not to show up at the golf course on Sunday, that Patrick had to find a replacement caddy. And then he goes out and wins his singles match on Sunday. So
he's very unaffected.
You know, he seems to, for whatever reason, play
almost
well
thrive
in the swirl of controversy. But look, at the end of the day, controversy seems to follow him There have been a number of incidents throughout his career. We can go back to his college days. You can go back to comments he made at a European Tour event a few years ago that were inappropriate. You can go back to this incident at the Ryder Cup and his comments there. You can go back to the Hero. You can go back. I mean, you know, so there's a history here.
But with all that being said, I think guys like Patrick and Sergio and Bryson and anybody else who is, quote, controversial and on the tour, I think these guys are good for the tour, and I think the tour loves it.
Well, I don't know that the tour loves dealing with it, but it certainly brings more attention
right
to the sport, to the game. It brings more casual fans, I would argue, into the game, and it certainly gives us plenty to write and talk about. So,
look, nothing against Luke Donald. I love Luke Donald. I love Paul Casey. I'm just bringing up two guys who are completely non-controversial, don't ever cause a problem. Imagine how boring it would be if every personality was Luke Donald or Paul Casey. It would be boring. And I have nothing against those two guys. I think they're phenomenal players, and they have their place on the tour. But what I'm saying is we need fiery personalities who do the things that these guys do, who cause controversy. Same as Brooks Koepka. The tour needs these guys. Everybody doesn't need to be the same.
Well, and it brings a level of reality to the sport, right? Because these are real people with real issues, real problems. Everyone, you know, everyone is flawed in some respect.
Right.
And this sheds some light on that. And
right,
to your point, it makes it more interesting. So, look, you certainly don't condone some of the things that have happened, be it Patrick Reed's issue in the bunker, be it Sergio Garcia with his antics in Saudi Arabia last year. But it certainly, again, gives us something to talk about, makes the game more interesting in that way.
I'm not going to sit here and say I've never tried to improve my lie in the bunker, so whatever. I'm not going to judge him on that. But anyways, speaking of guys who are big personalities, your buddy Phil's in the field this week, and Phil announces that he's moving to Jupiter. He's going to be neighbors with Tiger Woods. They're becoming chummy little buddies now.
How about that? He closed on a lot on Jupiter Island, and he'll be right down the street from Tiger Woods, who, of course, lives there and is called that area of South Florida home for a long time now. So Phil and Tiger taking this bromance to another level. They'll be neighbors. I'm sure there'll be games coming at the Medalist. We'll probably have some more fireside chats with Phil down in Jupiter. But really, as you mentioned before we began the podcast, this is presumably a tax move as much as anything, because as we all know, California has some of the highest taxes, if not the highest taxes in the country, and Florida is a no income tax
right
state. So Phil stands, I would imagine, to save quite a bit of money. And as we can remember, a handful of years ago, he did bring up the point of taxes in California, which raised a bit of a stink back then. But now he will, I'm sure his accountants, I'm sure Phil will be much happier to not have to pay state income tax.
Right. So that's good for Phil. He's in the field this week. So we're done with the Hawaii swing, the two tournaments there. And now we'll start working our way through California. I know they're at the American Express this week. And then next week, we get our first chance for Tiger Woods to win tournament number 83 next week at Torrey Pines. And once again, a place he's very familiar with, a place he's very comfortable, and a place he has won many times before.
Yeah, he is, I believe he's won, what, 8 times?
Yeah.
There, so Tiger's sitting on victory 82. Now, it's been a long time since he's won at Torrey Pines, but, you know, again, is there anything to suggest from what we've seen, be it Tiger's play in the President's Cup, be it Tiger's play during the Masters last year, his play at the Zozo in the fall, seems to be healthy now. There's nothing to suggest that he would not be in contention next week when he makes his season debut at Torrey Pines. So
his iron play at the Zozo and his distance control and iron play and ball striking at the President's Cup were both nothing short of unbelievable. I mean, I know I'm a Tiger homer. I know that I tend to get a little overzealous sometimes, but from what I've seen at the Zozo and what I've seen at the President's Cup, I could argue he's back to being the best iron player in the game again.
Yeah, and that would not be an overstatement by any means whatsoever. And the thing that will be interesting to see at Torrey Pines, of course, you've got Ruff there, so it'll come down to how well he's driving the ball.
But the driver lately has not been a problem. It's become a weapon.
Yeah, even that has improved. So then there's the matter of temperatures. And, you know, we saw a few years ago, of course, dealing with some injuries where his back had some back issues. And, of course, the temperature can drop quickly there. He can get cold. His body can get tight. So presuming he is healthy, presuming that he is not somehow impacted. Look, he's still 44 years old. He's going to have days where he wakes up and doesn't feel great.
Yeah, it happened at the President's Cup. Remember, he didn't play on Saturday because he said his body just couldn't go.
Yeah, so that's going to happen. You know, whether that happens at Torrey Pines, we'll see. If it doesn't, then there's no reason to expect that he would not be in contention at a place he knows extremely well, has had a ton of success at. So all eyes will be on Tiger. Rory McIlroy, of course, in the field. You mentioned this week's field, American Express, where Phil is the host of the event. You know, the field next week is loaded. You've got Rory McIlroy in the field. You've got Tiger and a number of other top players. TaylorMade, of course, friend of the program, big presence there. And, that sort of, to me, always feels like the first kind of big boy event of the year because you've got Torrey Pines, you've got Tiger, you've got a number of other big names in the field. It sort of feels to me like the first really big golf tournament of the year.
Yeah, speaking of TaylorMade, they have got their new equipment, the sim out, and I just saw this morning it's the number one choice of the 33 players that are not under driver contract in Abu Dhabi. More have chosen the sim driver this week than any other model. So the brand new TaylorMade driver that you will see in Rory McIlroy's bag next week at Torrey Pines. I do believe Tiger will be playing the sim as well. If you've noticed, Dustin Johnson also using the sim, but for the first time in Hawaii, Dustin was using a rescue club that was part of the sim makeup from the new TaylorMade line. So new stuff coming from TaylorMade. But speaking of Tiger, and this is the first podcast of the year, I'm going to start off a little easy on you. Does Tiger get the all-time victory number 83 this season?
Yes.
He does. Does he win multiple times this season?
You know, it's so hard to say because, again, it comes down to health with him, right? We saw it. Look, he looked phenomenal at Augusta, and then he had a knee issue, which impacted him throughout the course of the season. So,
all right, so health staying good. Does he win two times this year?
Yeah, I think so.
Can he win more than two times?
I mean, it's hard to say no to that. But, you know, look, I have no idea how it's – put it this way. If I knew how many times Tiger was going to win this season,
You'd be a very rich man.
Right?
I'd
be on the phone to Vegas right now. But
all right, so you're comfortable with saying two times?
Yes, I would say that's pretty fair.
Are you comfortable with saying one of those two will be a major?
I mean, like, predictions are, you know.
I mean, he's got to be the favorite going into Augusta, right? I mean, there's absolutely health. Once again, every single thing that we say is health is good. If the health fails, then obviously things change. He's got to be the leader going into Augusta.
Right. Certainly he'll be the favorite going into Augusta, I would think, even with guys like Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy is number one there, and so forth. I think Tiger will be the betting favorite going in there.
Right.
Then you look at other venues, the PGA Championship at Harding Park in San Francisco.
It's a big ballpark.
Golf course he's won at before. But again, it's in May, so who knows what the weather situation. San Francisco, even in the middle of the summer, the weather can get dicey. So who knows what happens there. You look at Royal St. George's for the Open Championship. You know, doesn't have a great track record there. I think he missed the cut, if memory is correct, the last time the Open was there and the last time he played there. So,
and where's the U.S. Open?
And the U.S. Open at Wingfoot. So there's a golf course, you know, thick, rough, tree-lined, narrow fairways, sort of a traditional U.S. Open golf course, or what you would expect it to be. Who knows? I mean, certainly could play well there, but again, dealing right. with a tight ballpark,
right.
A tournament he certainly won a number of times, but who knows what happens there. It wouldn't shock me if he wins a major.
No, it wouldn't shock me at all. I think Augusta is obviously the best chance. And I think moving forward, as Tiger gets older, he can continue to contend at Augusta because it's not one that is going to rule him out due to length. He always plays the golf course well. He knows where to miss the ball at. He knows how to play those greens. I mean, as long as he's playing golf and healthy, I have to add that in, as long as those two are happening, he's always going to be in contention or with the ability to be in contention at Augusta. Once again, the other three majors do move, and I think as we go in the round through the Open Championship, there are some courses that fit him better than others. And then when you add in Harding Park, once again, giant ballpark, I believe that favors guys who drive the ball a little further than he does. But that's not to say that he can't contend there. He can. He's just going to have to drive the ball straight, and he's going to have to hit his long irons better than anybody else. But I think a two-win season, especially if there's a major involved, is another massively successful year. It puts us at 16. We're at 15 now. It puts us at 16 majors and gives him 84 victories. That's a remarkably successful year considering where we were 2 years ago.
And it brings, you know, it brings 18 into play.
Oh, absolutely. If he gets to 16 this year, it absolutely brings 18 into play.
And, the 2021 Open Championship will be at St. Andrews. So, again, a golf course that he's won at before, suits his game well. You know, so that would open the door that much, brings him that much closer to 18, opens the door to, you know, this could really happen. Because I think you bring up a valid point about Augusta. That's a place he should compete well, at least for the next few years. I don't know how much deeper he can go beyond that because he's 44 at this point, but you would certainly think this year and maybe two more years has a very realistic shot of winning there, again, if he's healthy. And then you look at some of the venues for the Open Championship, a place where, you know, we've seen guys in their 40s win there before. So
right.
That can definitely happen. So who knows? It's exciting to see. I mean, last year was incredible. I don't know how he could top that, but he's certainly proven that he's one of the best players in the world again.
Yeah, I mean, this year looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. It looks like Brooks is kind of picking up where he left off. I know the knee surgery, some people were wondering if there would be some rust there. From what we've seen in the first round at Abu Dhabi, not sure what, you know, rounds 2, 3, and 4 will hold. But what we've seen coming out of the box, he looks very sharp. So we've got a fun year with Brooks ahead. I think Rory McIlroy is going to have a great year as well. And then you got guys heating up like Justin Thomas had won 3 of his last 6 starts. There are so many good players. We are really set up for a great year in 2020 on the tour.
We are. I mean, welcome to 2020, new decade. And we're 2 weeks in and we've already had a month's worth of stories, and it should be another good year.
Yeah, we got next week once again. This week they're in California at the Amex. We will see them next week at Torrey Pines. And then if my memory serves me correct, I know that you've come up with the bet, and I know maybe you didn't invent this name. However, it really truly is the best name ever. After we have the Farmers at Torrey Pines, we move on to Scottsdale and the Wasted Management Open coming up, which is always a fun tournament to watch. I know generally not the strongest field. We don't get some of the strongest players there, but still a fun tournament to watch. After that, the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, and then we will see Tiger, what I'm guessing will be back-to-back weeks at the Genesis at Riviera and then the World Golf Championship in Mexico as we then start the Florida Swing after that. We will be back after Torrey Pines. We will talk to you. Who knows? We could be talking about win number 83, which, I mean, would really just ramp things up totally as we head and prepare. You know how it is when Tiger wins once before the Masters. That has been a good omen for him going into the Masters. So a fun season on the way. So much to report. So much going on. We will be back. We will talk to you once again after the Farmers Insurance Open, Torrey Pines in San Diego. Wacker, thanks so much. Glad you made it back from your jaunt to Hawaii, and looking forward to another fun 2020 season.
Let's do it.